So how long have you lived in Greer?
We moved here in 1939. My mother and dad and my two brothers and three sisters. And we lived on Victor Mill Village. And I went to Victor School from my first through my seventh year. We had seven grades down there. And then I started at Greer High in the eighth grade and graduated from Greer High School. And I met my husband when I was just 15, and we dated off and on all those years. And when I graduated from high school, we got married. We've been married 53 years.
So what made your family decide to move to Greer?
I really don't know that. My dad was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and my mother was born in Greenville, South Carolina. And undoubtedly, my dad's work took him to Greenville, and that's how he met my mother. We'd always ask him about that, and he said, well, I had a lot of girls that was after me, and our mother could run the fastest. That's what he would always tell us. But he started working at Victor Mill, and he had a heart attack and died when he was just 55 and a half years old. I was pregnant with Chris, my oldest son at the time. And he was sitting in the swing on the front porch and had a heart attack and died sitting there. Mm. And my mother never married again. She never ever dated anybody, and she lived to be 93 years old. I guess that's how we wound up in Greer. My oldest brother, he worked at Victor Mill just like my dad did. He worked for a while, but he wanted to go to Stamps Baxter Music School in Dallas, Texas. And when he saved up enough money, he went out there, and he went to work for Stamps Baxter, and he never came back to Greer. But we girls should stay here. Our youngest brother, Gerald, he died 4 years after my dad did. He was a hemophiliac, and there was no treatment for hemophilia then. And he was just an invalid. He just lived to be 18 years old. And of course, we stayed in Greer, and I had another sister that died in 1979. She had a tumor inside of her spinal cord that could not be removed. She was living today. Laser, it completely paralyzed her after a few years. She was just 49 when she died. And then my oldest sister, in 1997, she and her husband were both in the hospital. She was diabetic, and she had to have kidney surgery. She broke her hip and just had different surgeries that she never got over. And both of them wound up in the hospital at the same time in Greenville. And her husband died about a week later, and she was carried to the nursing home, and she died 1 year later. He died in 96, and she died in 97. And my sister Madeline had died in 79. And my brother Dan, he lives in Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia. He's been out there. He left Greer after he finished high school in 41. And he's not in music anymore because he's 82. He doesn't direct. He was music director, but he still teaches his Sunday school class. He and his wife, he has a son and daughter. The son lives in Nashville. I mean, the daughter lives in Nashville, and the son lives in Chattanooga. And my sister Sherry, we're the only two here now. She lives at Lyman. She's pianist at Lyman First Baptist Church. And she and her husband live down there, and she has a daughter and two grandsons in Greenville and a son in Dallas, Texas. He and his wife do all the music at the church there in Dallas. And that's about it.
Now, did your dad work at Victor Mill while he was minister of music?
Yes, he did. Back then, music directors were not paid for their work. He was a music director at Victor Baptist Church, And when Walter Satterfield, he was a member at Victor Baptist, and when he organized Southside, he was going to North Greenville College, and he thought a church was needed on that side of town, so they started having Sunday school classes in a home out there on James Street. And then he decided, he said the Lord was calling him to build a church. And so he built a little tabernacle where the church stands today. And he asked my dad if he would come as music director. So when Dad left Victor Baptist, we left too and went to Southside. And I can remember those days as a teenager with the sawdust floor, going to church all dressed up on Sunday and our high-heeled shoes walking through that sawdust. And, but, you know, as years went by, they kept building, you know, in the church and everything until they had the present church and fellowship hall and everything. We were living in New York because my husband was stationed in New York in the Air Force when Walter Satterfield left Southside. And see, my dad had died 4 years before then. And I think Walt just felt lost without him because that had been his music director. And when we came back to Greer to live, our Chris was 2 years old, and I was pregnant with our son, Brett. And Preacher Feldman had just come, that's pastor at Southside, and he was there for 26 years. I had four children when he left there. He used to aggravate me and say, well, every time we have a revival, you're pregnant. But he was strict, but he was great. I learned so much from the Bible, from that man. I mean, just, you don't sit under Glenn Feldman for 26 years and not know everything there is in the Bible. And that's the truth. I mean, that man, he's not living today. He passed on. His wife's in a nursing home in North Carolina. But I can remember men we would have in revivals, Preacher Feldman knew these famous pastors, you know, all over the United States. And a lot of them brought their own music directors with them. And two different ones, I can remember one that came with Dr. Joe Henry Hankins, and his name was Steve Taylor, and he was Armenian. And I was pregnant with our Scott at the time, 6 months pregnant. He asked me to do a duet with him one day. And I think, that just thrilled me to death to think that I got to sing a duet with somebody like that. That was I've discovered the way of gladness. And it's a place where a woman sings and then the man sings and then they duet. And he told me how he wanted us to do it, you know, the ending of it and everything. And then we had another minister that brought his own music director, and I sang a duet with him. And it just made me feel so important then. I look back on it now, and I said, well, I used to do some good things like that. I'm old now. I don't do that much singing. But, we was born into music, and my older sister's the only one that didn't sing. And my sister that is pianist at Lyman First Baptist, she sings, and she also directs. She's directed at churches. But I wanted to learn to play by ear, and my daddy wouldn't let me. He said, you're going to learn it the right way, or you're not going to learn it at all. I'm sitting there and pick songs out, you know, with one hand, but... there was a Dave Minor course then to learn to play by ear. And that's what I wanted to take because I have a cousin in Greenville. She and her mother, that boy, they can just play all over a piano. But that's the way I wanted to learn to play. And he said, no, you'll do it the right way, not at all. So. And I can also remember, too, back in the early days of Southside, this was when Walter Satterfield was pastor. He had preacher, I don't remember what state, he was way off somewhere, and he brought his music director with him. And I said, that's when my dad was living, and I can remember my dad saying, he was a big old man, he said, when he opens his mouth to sing, said, it looks like the side of a big cave opens up. And then at the time, my daddy was Christian music, gospel quartets, but he loved Mr. Politanoff. And there's nothing that would have suited him any better than if I'd gone to Metropolitan Opera. There was a program on at the time. It was Firestone Hour, and it was, I can remember those two opera singers, Loretta Melchior and Risa Stevens, and they would sing the theme song to that program, and I would stand and sing along with them, and it would just thrill my daddy to death if I had gone into opera, but there's already a little old boy there, so that didn't happen. But I think a lot of times, that music director told Daddy, though, he said, whatever you do, take her on with her music just as far as she will go. And that made me feel good. Well, Sherry, she's got a voice just like mine, too. We both high soprano. And my sister Madeline, she sang alto. And we had a lady sextet at Southside, and another lady sang soprano, and two of them sang alto, and my sister and another lady sang tenor. But my sister, she could take the tenor high, or she could take it low. So when one of the ladies that sang soprano and one that sang alto left our church, Madeline just dropped down and started singing bass, so we were a quartet then. And then my sister died in 79. After she passed away, we went back to three-part harmony. And a lot of times, Nancy Wilson's dad, Bill Tinsley, would sing with us, and he'd sing bass, and we'd have a quartet. We always had a group. But after we all got older, they stopped singing. They even stopped singing in the choir, and I was by myself then. So, of course, almost 4 years ago, we left Southside and came to Appalachia. So, well, Melvin Morris, he's directing the music at Southside now. He's older than I am, but he sings gospel music, and he sings in our choir over there, and he sings some with us too, but it just got to where, I mean, there wasn't too many choir members over there anymore, and we started visiting around, and we walked in Appalachia and heard Herschel Crane preach and heard that choir sing under Tom's direction, and we come home. That's it, right there. We don't need to look anymore. Yeah. We'd already been to five churches, and we found our home there at Appalachia, and I love it. I hated for Herschel Crane to retire so early after we went over there, but we love it over there, and I love singing in that choir with Rusty directing, too.
I want to ask you about the revivals. What were those like at Southside? What were the services like?
Well, we would go. We'd have a revival. Would usually start on a Sunday night, and it would go through Saturday night, for a week of it. And we would have, the choir would sing and special music and things. You know, you just take care of regular business and everything, and then the visiting preacher would preach. Now, one, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dr. Percy Ray. Now, our first pastor never had him in revival. He used to come to Victor Baptist when I was a child, and people that worked on the third shift in the mill had to get up and go to work on the third shift. That's how long he would preach. And as a child sitting there, and I can remember one night he was preaching on hell, and he had all the lights cut off in the church. He's a big man. And he run up and down that aisle hollering forever, forever. And, you know, as a child, things like that scare you to death.
Yeah.
And that's the way we grew up, hearing preachers like that. And revivals that would go on a whole week, and when your dad's music directed, you're supposed to be there. And I sang in the choir at Victor Baptist Church when I was just 12 years old. I just grew up fast. But Glenn Felmet, he was stayed there, you know, longer than any pastor we had, and he would have the revivals would go on about a week, and as years went by and different pastors, they'd cut them down, you know. Well, I know when Keith Kelly was our pastor, football games on Friday night, but Keith Kelly wasn't calling the service off, not for any football games. You were supposed to be there. But most of them would be an entire week. And back in those days, a lot of people would get saved, too. I mean, seem like people are not as hard-hearted as they are today. It's some people it don't seem like anything phases them. But we enjoyed it. It was tiresome getting ready and going to church every night for a week. But we enjoyed it, though. I mean, that's all we ever knew. So, and growing up on the Victor Millbridge, I mean, we could walk to Victor Baptist Church from where we lived. We lived on 2nd Street. I've not been down there in years. I've heard that there's so much change. I just, we go by the old Victor Baptist Church. I've never been by the new one. But we were members there a long time. And after Southside was organized, though, we went over there. But we as kids, though, it was tiresome and no air conditioning, you know, revivals in the summertime and keeping windows open and everything. But when you're expected to go, you go. You go and you don't fuss about it. But I guess the first time that I ever saw my husband was at Victor Baptist because one of his friends was a member over there and he would come with him sometime. You want me to tell you how I first met him? When I started Greer High School. Well, we had a skating rink down at the old YMCA building at Victor. Well, from my house, we could walk down there. We'd walk through the Methodist churchyard, and then the YMCA building was down there, and they were skating every Friday and Saturday night.
Roller skating?
Yeah. And my oldest sister, her husband, that boy, he could really skate. And I think mostly he'd just drag her around the floor. But we'd go every Friday night down there. And I would see him with this friend down there. And then when I started to Greer High School, we would be changing this old Greer High School that burned down. And I would be coming from one side of the school, going through the auditorium. That's where class we'd change. And I would meet his class going and going the other direction. And he would always smile at me and speak. And I didn't have any idea who he was, and I knew his sister. But I never did see him speak to anybody else. And I had a study hall 6th period in there, and I was practicing back there in the music room one day to sing something. And after that, I got to thinking he'd keep meeting and meeting me down there in that hall and speak and just smile. And now I was in the GAs and we were having a GA Valentine banquet at Victor Baptist Church, and I thought, I guess I was mighty bold, I thought, I'm going to ask him if he'd like to go to that banquet with me. And so I told him one day when we met, I said, could I see you after school? And he said, sure. So he met me up there in the hall, and I invited him to. He already had driver's license. He was 16. He had driver's license. And so he went to the banquet. Well, another boy that went to church with us went with my younger sister, Sherry. Us inviting those boys to go to a GA banquet. But Jewel was driving his own car. Well, we came home at the house, you know, and went in our house in the living room. Well, my sister Sherry went off in another room to play with her paper dolls. And left me and Jewel and Joe Floyd, the boy she was with, sitting there. And then Jewel took him home. But I guess that's when we first started going out together. And we'd go together. I think the first we dated about 6 months. And then we broke up, and I really wasn't old enough to be dating. But, you know, you had sweethearts. Mm-hmm. And then there would be somebody else, you know, from the church, and I'd go out with him. He'd go out with somebody, and about 6 months later, he'd call me up one night. I started one night and said, do you think I'd just sit here and wait for you to call me? But it went on like that all through my high school years, and he graduated, and he joined the Air Force and went to New York, and I had one more year, and I was going with this guy. But I was so smart when he wrote me that first letter from New York, because I knew, you know, that he was writing to that girl because he was dating her when he left, and I was dating somebody else. And he wrote that first letter, and I wrote him a smart letter back, and I said, I don't pay second fiddle to anybody. If you want me to write to you anymore, you can write and tell her that you're not going to write to her anymore. And one of her friends told me at school one day, said, Bobby Lou thinks nobody's writing to her. Jewel's not writing to anybody but her, but I believe he is. And I said, well, if that's what she wants to think, let her think it. And that's all I said. And I guess by then she got that letter from him. But, I was just being so smart. If you're going to be dating somebody else, I mean, if you're going to be writing to somebody else, don't write to me anymore. It was a long courtship, but I told him, I said, why in the world did you ever marry me? He said, because I loved you. And I said, well, we always was breaking up, but I knew as young as we were, we couldn't have gone together 4 years straight. Mm-hmm. No, that wouldn't have been good, because we needed to meet other people and date other people. But my sisters loved it. He's brother-in-law. He's always been brother-in-law.
Did you go to work?
The dime store when I was in high school. Scott's Dime Store, downtown Greer. It was located on Main Street. If you come down, start up, where the fire department, police station is, and come down. And McClellan's Dime Store was on the right, and Scott's Dime Store was down here on the left, and then McCliskey Todd Drug Store was on the end. And I worked in there. And this guy, well, he was below me in school. He worked in there, and did the stock and everything. And he at one time sang with the Blackwood Brothers Quartet as a bass singer. We would play records in the dime store. He always loved the Blackwood Brothers Quartet, and we'd play. I was working at the candy counter, and then I worked back in where the two screws and screwdrivers and all that equipment. But he had put on records in there, and we'd leave it turned low, and he'd sing along with the quartets. And I worked in there. That's only place I ever had a job, and that was in my junior and senior years in high school. In fact, I worked down there when I was pregnant with Chris. And Faye Hardy and her husband that go to Southside, and she was younger than I am. And we both were pregnant at the same time. And we would get sick, and I'd have spells I'd nearly faint, and I'd run upstairs and lay down on the couch, and then she'd be up there. I think Mr. Starnes, our boss man, must have really got upset with us. And my husband was off in service, and her husband was off in the service. And here we wasn't old enough to have been married. Of course, after Jewel come back from Korea, and he was stationed in New York, and then when he came and got me and Chris, and we were up there until he got out of service. My mother nearly, every time she left the house, there were no car seats and things in, Chris would stand beside of her in the seat next to the door, and she would drive with this hand and put with her arm around him. And it just nearly killed her when we took him off. But she would do that, and of course we were gone, when we came back when I was pregnant with Brett. Just that's the only working I ever did. My sister worked in the mill. Now Sherry never did, my youngest sister, but Madeline and Vera, they both worked in Victor Mill, just like my dad. My mother never worked. She'd worked in the cigar factory in Greenville when she was young. She met my dad, but she never worked after that. Women didn't work a lot back then. They stayed home and raised their families, and that's what my mother did. She was always there, and she lived with us here 5 years. And she was having spells where she was she had Alzheimer's. And when she talked, it was just like a foreign language. She knew what she was saying, but we didn't. And we finally had to put her in the nursing home. She lived here 5 years and 13 over at Roger Huntington. And I'll never forget, we were having, Ken Watson was our music director at Southside, and we were having choir practice before church on Sunday night, like we do at Appalachian now. And my mother, if she ever talked, it was just like a foreign language. And one night, I'd go every day, because see, she'd just right up here at Roger Huntington. I was, one Sunday night, I was in there, and I'd finish feeding her, and she was just like a foreign language, what she was saying. And I told her, I said, Mama, I've got to go. I said, it's about time for choir practice to start at church. And I said, I'll see you tomorrow night, though, but I've got to go on and get to church now. And she looked up at me just as plain as anything you've ever heard in your life and said, be sure and tell them who Jesus is. Just like that. And then it was just back like, you know, she taught a Sunday school class. The older ladies in the church, she had taught that Sunday school class all those years after my dad died. That work, you know, that's not the only work I ever did except just tending to my children and now grandchildren. I used to leave here at 2 o'clock and go get in line down there. Do you know where Beach Springs and D.R. Hill, mm-hmm. those schools are? Well, I'd go through Lyman, come through Lyman, come just below Burns and come and go Beach Springs all the way down. Duncan Elementary, D.R. Hill, and Beach Springs, side by side. I'd go down to Beach Springs and get in line. You have a number. And the teacher will come out about 20 minutes to 3. And the cars, they'll come around and go behind the school in double circles and all the way back up to the main road. And she starts up there, and she'll get so many numbers and let a child take them back into the school. And that group of children, when the school's out, they get to come out first. And then they leave, and then the other cars pull up. I've done that all my life. I used to pick up Flea at school and my own children. But I've enjoyed it. I mean, just give me something to do, you know, not working or anything. I can get up in the morning and get my housework done, and then I've got the rest of the day. And I've never had any desire to be up there. And I told him, I said, I might get jealous of all these women. I used to aggravate him when our kids were in school because there was a lot of little widow ladies that were teaching over at Tryon Street. It's no longer there, but a lot of those teachers over there lost their husbands, and I'd aggravate him about his little widow ladies, and I was just aggravating him, and he knew I was, but I'd carry on about his girlfriends. But I said, no, I might get jealous if I come up there and saw these little girlfriends of yours that come in all the time. But he can tell some funny tales about record driving and things. He told me one time about a little old man that he carried home from work one day and brought his car up there. And he said, I told him, now sit here in the wrecker, and I'll come around and open the door and get you out. And he said, by the time I got around, he said, he's laid out on the ground. It just things like that.